Hey, everybody, it's Jesse Ziegler and Quinn Cody with the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show. We're here after stage six, the day before rest day, and I got big news. Quinn's back.
That's right. I'm back in the studio.
See how good he sounds?
Listen to that, right?
He's not connected
fully recovered from COVID.
Yep, he's all negative, tested up.
I'm kind of missing sitting on my couch in the morning, though. I think I might have to have Jesse bring all this stuff over to my house and do the show from my couch, because it's a lot more comfortable than couching his office chair.
Yeah, we don't let him use his pajama pants here. He's got to put regular pants on when he comes into the studio.
This morning was the first time I put on regular pants in a week. It just felt so weird. I'm like, oh man, I don't like this. I think I'm go to work in my pajamas today.
Oh, enough about your pants already. Hey, today is a Moto Minded day, presented by Moto Minded. Our rally stage is in, what a day it is. Moto Minded, go check them out. Build yourself a rally moto kit. Or, hey, you got a dual sport and you want a headlight that works, you should probably check out Moto Minded. We're talking like custom wired plug-in ride. You plug it in, all your stock switches work. You have a badass LED headlight that's going to ignite the trail for you. They work. But the rally moto kit can turn your dirt bike into a rally bike quickly, super easy, which I think y'all should do.
For sure. Rally That's moto kits, here. Headlights, dual sport headlights, helmet lights, wiring, everything you need. Moto Minded has got it all. And they've got a lot of stuff in stock, which is a lot of times hard to find right now.
Yeah. So. And the reason they have it in stock is they source stuff like really local sourcing, hardware, sourcing, manufacturing. He does a lot of his own manufacturing through 3D printing or partnering with other manufacturers. So give old Chris Vestal a call up there at Moto Minded, and he'll hook you up with some great, cool things for your dirt bike. And then, of course, climb. You got to wear the climb gear. If you're going to be riding a dirt bike and want to be taken seriously, you just wear climb gear. That's all there is to it.
That's right.
Today is a bananas day. We haven't had one of these days in a long time where we came in and we're checking in with all our sources and we don't know what the F is going on, because
not since yesterday.
Not since yesterday. That's the Dakar rally for you. And until we're boots on the ground in our factory rally trash truck doing this podcast live, we're going to have a little delay on information. But here's what happened today. It was supposed to be a big day, 400 plus kilometers of racing. And here's how the rankings come down at the end of the stage. Daniel Sanders from Australia crushing it on the Gas Factory Racing, taking his second stage win of the year, third if you count the prologue, right?
Yep.
His teammate Sam Sunderland right behind him. So a Gas 1-2 today. Yep. Sam's only a couple minutes behind him. We got
guys only a 2 minutes, 26 seconds behind him.
Yep. He's right there.
In third, Matthias Faulkner was 2 minutes and 36 seconds behind Sanders.
So these guys are stacked today, and you're going to find out why in a second. And then we got Pablo Quintanilla leading Honda on the day. He's 3 minutes and 15 seconds behind Sanders. And then our boy Ricky Brabeck from the USA on the Monster Energy Honda. Top five today, making up some time. Only 3 minutes and 19 seconds behind him. So we're talking top five are covered by 3 minutes.
Very close. And another notable here in sixth.
Very notable.
Young American Mason Klein.
He's only 20 seconds. He's not even 20 seconds behind Ricky Brabeck on the day.
Yep. Keeping consistent once again. He started in sixth, finished in sixth. So very, very impressive ride for him once again. You see a lot of the top guys started back and finished in the front. So Mason, whatever he's doing to the speed that he's riding and navigating is working out for him.
Yep. We're not surprised anymore, Mason. We're not going to be surprised by you anymore.
I'm still a little surprised.
Well, you might be wondering why the top six are within 3 minutes of each other. But if you keep going down the standings, I mean, the top 15 are within 5 minutes of each other. And the reason that is because the stage was only 100 kilometers today. Stage got shut down. And the reason it got shut down, we talked about this yesterday. They ran the motorcycles over the top of a race car, race truck, race buggy course today. And that wreaked some havoc out there. Quinn, tell me what happened in the first 3 kilometers of the race today.
So it sounds like both Daniela Petrucci and Ross Branch had a big crash in the same spot, 3 kilometers into the stage, where there was a big rock dug out from the cars and trucks, and so they both had a big crash there.
And they started 1 and 2 on the day, right?
Yep. So first couple guys, I think low light early in the morning, and they couldn't see the rocks in there, and both got taken out of it. Ross Branch got the worst of it. I think the reports we heard was that he had a broken leg.
Yeah, he got evac'd out on the helicopter. Petrucci ended up finishing the stage in 40th, but big gash on his elbow, blew up the bike, crashed, all his gears tore up. So that right off the bat, 3 kilometers in, the two guys out on the stage hit the same hidden obstacle, wipe out. So
helicopter's already flying 3 kilometers in, you know, just a couple minutes after the start of the stage. So from the reports we got is the stage was beat to hell after all the cars and trucks went over it yesterday. And, you know, the course, some of the guys said it was blown out 300 meters wide. The road book didn't really pertain to what they were seeing on the course, because the dangers were either not there or completely different than what they were when the guy went through and built the road book.
Yeah, you can imagine the guy going through and building the road book and saying, oh, this is a drop off here, and, you know, there's a rock garden here, I'm going to mark these on the road book or whatever, because these guys are going to come in at 100K or 120K. I need to tell them to slow down. There's danger ahead. You have 150 cars and trucks and buggies go through there. The terrain's totally separate. Like, those danger markings are irrelevant. Nobody can see anything. Plus, it churns everything up and turns it kind of in like this dust and rock soup.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes like a Baja race course, right? So it's something that gets pre-run, gets beat up, thrashed, and everyone knew it was coming. I mean, they you know, they've known about this stage for months now, and it's not unheard of. They do it in other rallies, and, you know, we've raced over the same track multiple days before many times, but apparently today it was really bad. The safety resources were stretched pretty thin. I think when they got to a refueling or a checkpoint or something, a lot of the riders were complaining.
Expressing concern, yeah.
And so, you know, there were some phone calls made. It sounds like the ASO officials decided at one point to just stop the stage.
Basically, so, turn everybody around at gas station, have them navigate back on like the second, third of the course or something, and head back to the pits. However, top 5 or 10 guys had already gone to gas and already taken off on the course again. So apparently what happened was the helicopter caught them, landed, and told them, hey, stop, turn around. You're going back because we don't have the air support to help you. Plus, hey, there's a safety concern on the course. How did this affect the race? Who benefited from this and who really missed an opportunity here?
Right.
To gain some time.
Clearly, I think there's a few guys that benefited. You know, anyone that was kind of struggling, that was injured, feeling a little bit down. John Beretta sounds like he started the stage with a broken collarbone.
It's so crazy. Yeah.
He got a gift today. He got to basically start his rest day early.
Yep.
I think he finished the stage, it looks like 14th place, so only lost about 5.5 minutes, which, if the stage had gone a full 400 kilometers,
who knows what that collarbone would have felt like, I mean, or even if he would have continued.
He may not have even finished. So I think that was a big gift for him.
Talk about making that decision yesterday to gut it out and just see what happens to try to get to the stage finish. That's why it's important to do that, because it played out really in his favor. It gave him another day in the rally to rest and possibly, I don't know if you can recover from a fractured collarbone in a day, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's the rumor that's going around anyway, is that he has a
collarbone injury of some sort.
But yeah, I mean.
Still, good move on his part to get out there and ride, because it really paid off for him today.
Yeah.
I assume, like, the front leaders who were leading the rally, you know, and had people chasing after them trying to make time, they were in a good position today with this shortened stage.
Yeah.
So we're talking Sam Sunderland, who's in the lead, and
yeah, and I think
Wagner
it,
and the,
it comes down guys. To your level of comfort in riding in those conditions. So sure. There's some guys that are more comfortable riding in those conditions. I would say that Ricky Brabec, being a Baja guy, he's down, you know, 40 some minutes, almost 50 minutes, and he has a lot of time to make up. So I think it was in his case, it was a missed opportunity.
Yep.
I think it probably worked against him. I think Daniel Sanders, who is, you know, he's an animal. Yeah. He's clearly the fastest guy in the rally right now, and I think it would have been a really good opportunity for him to put a lot of time on the rest of the field today. And, you know, he for sure missed an opportunity.
He made up a little time today, but he could have made up dozens of minutes today instead of two.
Yeah. But I mean, in the end, safety comes first. Yeah. It's dangerous. Okay. Rally's dangerous, but
yeah,
I think it was also kind of a big wake up call because these guys have been riding, you know, relatively unridden tracks for the last 5 days.
Yeah.
The dirt's been wet. There's been no dust. And so they're used to just holding it flat. And mm-hmm. now they're coming into rough stuff where they got to check up. They got to, you know, ride what they can see a little bit more. And mm-hmm. it's makes it hard for sure.
Yeah. Let's get on the phone with somebody. We got Daniel Sanders queued up. We sent him a message really quickly this morning to get his take on it because his quotes and everything from everything else we read this morning were pretty frustrated, I'd say.
Yeah, I think he wasn't super happy that the stage got canceled. So we're going to go ahead and play
play a message from Daniel that he sent us.
Response.
Hey guys, Daniel Sanders here, just checking in after day 6 of the Dakar Rally. Got my second stage win, or +3, including the prologue. Not too bad. Started off really well. We were on the course today that was driven on by the cars yesterday, and they opened it, so we like separated the field. So bikes did one side, one stage, and the cars did the other, and yeah, we got to like start on this, and it was already open, so the tracks were well ridden in, and we just sent it straight off the start, and yeah, we knew it was going to be pretty rough because the cars chew up and the trucks chew up a lot of stones and leave them in the two ruts as well. So yeah, it was pretty gnarly, that's for sure. Started off well for me. I caught Sam Summerlin, who started 2 minutes in front at about the 80K mark and passed him, and then got to the refueling and caught up with Walkner, and a few other boys were there still. And yeah, we all knew it was going to be sketchy going in. And yeah, the boys started to have a little chat about cancelling the stage and this and that. And for me, I was really comfortable in these conditions, as some riders were, but with I guess some riders that come in and weren't happy with it, I'm not sure why, because they were risking their life too much, this and that they were saying. But I dislocated my shoulder the day before. I nearly had a massive stack on day 3 that could have rode off my rally, and they're worrying about some rocks. I think it was a bit of a princess move. Like, in saying that, though, like, we knew we were going into a rough stage, and you ride to the conditions and you ride to what you can see on the track, like normal. And we've done this in Morocco this year, Silkway. We went over it another day, so we've done it before, and I don't know why. Like, there was a Ross Branch did have a crash at kilometre 2.9 at the start of the stage, and, you know, everyone saw the bike absolutely smashed after that, and like, well, it's not good to see that, obviously, because they were in the car tracks, and there was a massive rock in there that no one saw first thing in the morning, pushing, and yeah, but in that, it's just how I think that's just how rally is, and I've always learned to ride to the conditions, and some riders agree and some riders don't, and you know, some of those riders that didn't agree were up the pointy end, and I said to them, like, it's just the day. It's how you got your bike set up. It's how you ride the terrain, rocks. If you don't like rocks, then maybe don't do rally. Stay in the sand, go do sand races or something. But it was pretty frustrating, but I was happy to go on. But they stopped us all there due to some phone calls to some officials, and it was pretty annoying. But anyway, we still won the stage by 2.5 minutes or something, so I could have done some more damage if the day went on, but we'll have to wait for the next 6 days and see how we go. So fingers crossed, stay on two wheels, and yeah, everyone arrives safe to the finish line. and that's how it goes.
He's clearly frustrated with the day, understandably.
Yeah, a lot of info there for sure from Sanders, and you know, I think one thing that you could hear it in his voice when they saw Ross Branch's bike, you know, completely destroyed, according to him. Yep.
And a helicopter going out to pick up their co-racer.
You know, that's tough for sure. And I think that could have gotten in a lot of the guys' heads just seeing that. And right off the bat, it mentally kind of gives you
a wake-up call or some sort of reality that you definitely can't race through a lot of the times. I think Daniel's on the one end of the spectrum as far as a racer goes. He's ready to do what it takes to get through these challenging conditions and be just a gnarly dude.
For sure, but definitely calling out some of the other guys there a little bit.
He's vocal about...
He's not afraid to call it a princess move. And
yep, that's pretty bold. So pretty bold position, but I love
Chucky, though. He says it how it is. Yeah. And, you know, it's great. It's great having him up front in the rally and still hanging in there.
Yeah, this is a guy that's overall ISDE convincingly, like probably one of the most convincing ISDE overall victories in the history of that race. He just wiped people out that year, and then you know it's only his second rally, and he's said he's the fastest one out there repeatedly. He's raced like he's the fastest one out there. He took a break on one stage because he wanted to not win.
Yeah,
he had a picnic,
and. I think that, you know, the awareness that he has of what's going on around him and the comfort level that he has is super high. And
yeah.
You know, when a guy is riding well within his comfort zone at that kind of speed, they're very dangerous because the navigation becomes almost easier for them because they're not having to try so hard to ride the motorcycle. A lot of these guys are riding as hard as they can. And there's no capacity left to navigate with. Where you have a guy like Sanders, he's riding faster than everyone else, and he still has more. And so he has a lot of mental capacity there to read the road book and to do other things.
Yeah, and he's already had a couple close calls. I mean, 2 days ago, busted his chin off the rally tower and then reportedly dislocated his shoulder. But as he says, I was lucky it popped back in, so I kept racing.
Yeah.
Like that's a different mentality than a lot of
clearly people. He's a tough dude. Yeah. He's got something different than a lot of the other guys.
He's wired differently.
I don't doubt that we're going to see him win the Dakar sooner or later, if not this year.
He's sitting 5 minutes and 35 seconds behind Sunderland. Right now in the standings, he's got to be very confident as the leading Australian, obviously. And he sounds like he knows where he's at.
Yeah, you know, the other thing is he's hungry. He wants it, and you know, a lot of the competition have been at it for a while now, and they've either had wins already, and they don't have that same drive and that same desire to win. They're more on a protection mode, a conservation. Like we've already done it.
Yeah,
we don't have anything left to prove.
Sure.
To where Sanders. He's the hungry one. He's the one coming up and ready to attack.
Do you think he is going too hard? Do you think the other guys have actually a better game plan for a rally race like this where they're like, you can do that so many times before those bites actually stick? Like he's had two close calls already, but is the next time he goes off a dune riding at his comfort level going to be a race ending crash or... You know, because you see Matthias Wachner and Sam Sunderland, they're consistent, and they're at the top of the ranking. Do they know that the race hasn't started yet? And they're like, keep doing that. We're going to be at the end of this finish line doing what we do. So do you think he's hanging it out there too far?
I mean, for sure, he's on the ragged edge of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got the opposite strategy of those guys.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of it has to do with luck. We've talked about it before. Yeah. It's like you know, if he gets lucky, if he doesn't have another big one, then he'll probably win the race.
He'll be untouchable. Yep. Skyler brought that up when we talked with him and the rest of the crew in the pits. He said a lot of this has to do with luck, unfortunately, and you got to get it yourself. And you get through these spots sometimes, and sometimes you don't. You know, and his race ended yesterday, unfortunately.
You can have bad luck riding conservative, too. So,
yeah.
You know, Sanders, Wachner, they can they can have a tire cut or a rock they didn't see. And
yeah, Sunderland hasn't been mistake free. I wouldn't call mistake, but crash free. He had a pretty big get off, and he's not feeling 100% either. And I think Matias is always so careful out there that it's just going to be interesting to see how the rest day treats everybody. Some people coming out of that rest day tomorrow refreshed, and some people come out of it, they lost a bit of an edge, or they get cramped up, or an injury flares up or something, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is how your body reacts to the rest, and does it take you a day or two to get back going again? And
we
say conservative. These guys are already conservative.
That's a relative term.
Video of Matias Wachner riding across the desert. There's nothing conservative going on there. So
no, the pace, everybody we've talked to, is the pace is insanely high again this year. We thought it was going to really slow down with all those navigation tricks in the beginning, but I think Bereda averaged 70 miles an hour on the last stage he won, and that was 400 plus kilometers of racing. So that's going 70K for 250 miles almost.
70 miles an hour.
70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Not K, sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
That's an insane speed to be carrying. And all these guys are right there because the top five are only, within 17 minutes of each other in the overall ranking.
Yep.
Let's go over some general rankings right now after this shortened stage. Not a lot of shakeups. Sam Sunderland's still leading. He's 2.5 minutes ahead of Matias Wachner. Then we have Daniel Sanders in third, like I said, at 5:35 back. Adrian Van Beveren on that Yamaha, he's still very much in the thick of things and riding really well. 7:43 back. Pablo Quintanilla is the top Honda. He's in the top five at 17:44 back. Then the Sherco of Lorenzo Santolini. He's up next. Who's next?
Number seventh place now is Stefan Svitko.
Yeah.
Slovak rider.
It's moving up still.
24 minutes and 29 seconds back.
We're still within 25 minutes of the lead.
Yep. Just ahead of Kevin Benavidez, the
defending champ.
Defending champion on the Red Bull KTM.
Yep. He's still 25 minutes back, 24:56. Then the injured Joan Bereda. He's in sixth place still. Didn't lose a terrible amount of time. Ninth place.
Ninth in the general.
Sixes and nines are hard.
And I think this is kind of our bubble where when you get to 37 minutes, then we start, that start coming to the deficit. That's going to be a mountain to make up.
Yeah. But the big news is Mason Klein moved into the top 10.
Yep.
The USA rookie, 20-year-old Mason Klein. He's 33 minutes. 38 minutes
behind, yep. And he's only really a minute behind Bereda.
Yep. So he's got top 10 positioning, really well situated. He moved in front of Andrew Short and Ross Branch. Obviously, Ross Branch exited the race today with an injury. So, speaking of Mason Klein, we got a little notification out to him, and he sent us a little voice note straight to the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Studios. Let's hear from Mason about the day today, how it shook out, maybe how he's doing after beating himself up for 6 days.
All right, let's go, Mason.
Okay, here's Mason Klein.
Crazy stage today, stage six. Started off like any other day. Roll off the line, take it easy. Something that I haven't seen though is someone hurt right off the start. Basically, the course was ran the previous day by all the trucks and side-by-sides and everything. So you can probably just think of Mint 400 or any other best in the desert race right after a car, has gone through it. Pretty gnarly. The start line was on two-track, really deep ruts. And on the right side, which is where I think everybody rode, there was a giant, curb in the rut. And it took out Danilo, Ross, and I'm sure a few other people. I hit it as well, got pretty sketch. But in my opinion, the decision to run the race on the previous day's race course thing, with the cars, I think that was a bad decision to run us after they've been first. It's just dangerous. But I think the decision to stop it was maybe not the perfect decision, because in the end they let everybody finish to the refuel which is, I think, after the worst part of it, I guess, the most dangerous part, because then we were leading into dunes and we'd have our own section of race course at the end of the day. So it was kind of a bummer, especially because after the refuel, I know I made up some more time because some other racers got lost and I happened to just do the section no problem, fine. A bit of a bummer. The course was super awesome though. Some gnarly hare and hound uphill rock sections. Different than we've had so far. Super cool. Leading into the rest day, feeling pretty happy running 10th overall. Would have never guessed. Definitely didn't think that I would jump from, I think I was 14th or 13th before the day started, to 10th. Pretty crazy day. I'm tired, but not too tired. No crashes yet, but my finger, my pointer finger that I use the clutch with, pretty worn out because I don't shift enough, I guess. And I use it a lot in the dunes. So that's not good. I'm getting like a blister. It's kind of hard to bend my finger. But other than that, that's it. That's my only complaint so far. My finger hurts. Pretty awesome race so far. Coolest thing I've ever done in my life, by far. A lot of miles, kilometers. Yeah, amazing race. Love it. Thank you, guys.
That's so funny to hear him. He's got a finger problem.
So yeah, if a blister on your pointer finger is the biggest problem you've got after six days of Dakar, I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, half of a race, he's got a little blister on my clutch finger.
Yeah, only to be 20 years old again, right? Maybe great. This is the key. Maybe we just need to start breeding the Dakar racers
now.
Younger and
now we got to get on this.
Yeah.
Oh, great to hear from him. Cool insight to his perspective on the stage and, you know, how it all shook out for him. He did end up moving in the standings today, so it worked out okay for him. But very cool. Thanks for calling in, Mason. You know, just riding great again. Mason Klein's still surprising Quinn. Yep. Not surprising me. I'm not surprised by Mason Klein anymore.
Mason's doing a great job. And, you know, clearly for a rookie, he's come into this race, I think, more prepared than probably any rookie that has ever come into the race, really. My first rally or my first Dakar, literally, I had never raced a road book.
You just
I had
rode around with them.
I rode, I think, two or three road books before I started the Dakar. And I'd never seen a GPS before. I had no idea about the rules, nothing like that. So
you're like, what do I do when I get to this point? Mason, this machine's going to tell me what to do?
Yeah, he's done the work. You know, he's been over training with Jordi Villadoms in Spain and done Morocco Rally and Sonora Rally and all this other stuff. So he's really coming in prepared. I mean, he's done his homework over the last year, and it's really showing.
Yeah, it's great to hear from him. Who else should we talk to today? We should try to get inside the pits and get some insight into some action. Yeah. And I think Kendall Norman's probably our guy for that. Is he going to talk to us today?
I've been texting with Kendall all morning, so we'll try to give him a call right now and see if we can get him on the line and get a little info from him.
What's their status right now? What are these guys doing, the Kendall Norman program, while we wait for him to call in?
So he said they're actually headed to a hotel. They're leaving the bivouac and getting out to a hotel for rest day.
Right. So most of the teams, big teams, they'll head to a hotel, maybe get a real shower, sleep on a real bed for a while, not in a motorhome. Or in Kendall's case, like he's in the motorhome working and driving, but then he sleeps in a tent outside, right?
Yeah. Yep. So they get a break. It's nice. They give the team members a chance to sleep in the hotel too. They don't leave them in the tent.
Yeah, that's nice. All right. We got Kendall on the phone here. Let's give him a hang call. Tight while we connect him.
Hello.
Yo, Kendall.
Hey, Kendall.
What's up?
How's it going there?
Oh, good.
What do you? I'm here with Jesse. We got you. We're recording right now.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Hanging with Quinn here. He's back in the studio today, so that's a good sign.
Really? Tested negative.
Yep. He's clear.
I'm over the Kendall Norman Biofusion curry, coconut curry, helped me get through COVID.
Yeah, you sent a recipe over and cured him.
All right.
Nice work.
Well, that's
work.
A good thing.
That's good. You sound like you're ready for a rest day over there.
Yeah, we just kind of started the rest day. I woke up from a nap like an hour ago.
Great.
And we just went down and got some food. But we actually left the bivouac and are in the Hilton for the night. And then we go back tomorrow.
Nice. Proper rest.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, lucky to. I was kind of like, oh, I kind of want to stay in the bivouac. But then once I got here, I'm like, oh, I'm glad to be here for one day.
I bet that feels nice after the week that you guys have gone through.
Yeah, for sure.
A little nicer than your tent.
Yeah, the tent's not bad. Just when it's time to move to the next bivouac, you know, waking up and the first thing you do is tear it down and kind of get all dirty and stuff. I mean, it's a process, but... Yeah, it's definitely nice to escape the bivouac for a night. And,
That's cool.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Hey, cool. Kendall, you were the Dakar-winning mechanic for Ricky Brabec when he won, and now your role has changed. Can you talk about what your role officially is and what your day-to-day is pretty much like?
Yeah, so I did. I started over here at this program as Ricky's mechanic, and... You know, we worked really hard and we got that 2020 win together. And then after that, I kind of decided, like, this is not my dream. This is not what I want to do. And luckily, Eric came by and joined the team. And he's an awesome mechanic. And he's been my mechanic for years. And Quinn, you too. And so... Yeah, on that side of things, it's really good. Ricky and Johnny and the team was just like, yeah, I think you're a big help to the team and we want to bring you back. And, you know, you can help with the motorhome situation and help cooking for the guys in your motorhome. So, yeah, my situation right now is I got Ricky and Nacho. And I pretty much just like wake up in the morning and go and make them breakfast. And then Johnny and I share driving duties. And yeah, we go to the next bivouac. Or fortunately, this year we've only been to 3 bivouacs in 6 days. Mm-hmm. So we haven't moved around too much. But yeah, then the guys get back in, make them lunch, make them dinner. And yeah, I'm just kind of a chef, I would say, just because like it's something that I've taken a lot of interest in over the years, and I feel like it helps me perform better. Mm-hmm. So I like to use like things that work for me and help these guys with that. And it's not something that I feel like, you know, like they're going to eat a meal and be like good, but like come like second week, they've been eating good all week. I seem to think that they have more in the tanks than some of these other guys that haven't been on quite the regimen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to like sourcing food and finding all the ingredients and stuff over there, are you guys going to local grocery stores or do you ship stuff from Europe or how does that work?
So the team obviously ships the motorhomes over from Europe, and they go and do a store run, stock up on pastas and like a couple essential things. And then each person will pretty much bring, like Ricky brings some food, like he brings a coffee that he likes, and same for me. And being like the chef, for my motorhome, I bring salt and pepper, and like I bring some rice that I like to use. And yeah, so I bring a limited amount of stuff, and then we bring like our way of making coffee and yeah, just a few things that, you know, from home. But you'd be surprised, like the stores here, if you find a good one especially, they are super complete. I mean, I'm eating fruit. Let's see, I had onions from California. I've got like berries from Mexico. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much they've got produce from around the world in their nice markets out here.
Oh, that's good.
That's very cool. I saw you posted something. You had like a coconut filled with I don't know what was inside, maybe pomegranate seeds or something that the guys were drinking. What was that?
Yeah, so back home, Tyler Behrman and I, we like to get coconuts and drink the coconut and eat the meat out of it and stuff. So I saw them at the store and I just grabbed them too. And I go, hey, so boys, if you guys start twisting, I got a special treat for you. And so, yeah, they had a good day on stage 5. So, we had a coconut. They drank the coconut water. And then I had pomegranates that I'd found in Jeddah and mixed some pomegranate seeds in there with some lime. And I think Nacho put some honey in there. And just something different, you know, just to keep it fun for them and just kind of incorporate a lot of different things that are good for you. And yeah, just keep them stoked, you know.
You are the stoke general in the motorhome. I can tell you're there to like bring these guys up in the morning. It's also a lot of weight off their shoulders. Like I don't have to figure out, I'm going to walk over to like the mess hall tent and get, you know, some weird bivouac breakfast. They got Kendall taking care of them, and it must be working. Cause I mean, you're the reigning Baja 1000 champion right now.
Thanks. I wish I say it was working right now, but the times aren't showing it. Well, but, I'm in it for the win, and I give it my all every day and try to give these guys the best I can. And, the rest is on them, but so far they've been pretty stoked I've actually like every year I've only done it like this last year and this year, but I've incorporated a few other things into their regimen that they seem to really be liking. And yeah,
very cool. It's been good. For those of you listening that don't know, Kendall Norman is a 7-time Baja 1000 champion and very accomplished racer himself.
He won like
former teammate. Him and I were teammates for quite a few years together, and he's got a massive list of racing accomplishments, including the 2021 Baja 1000 championship.
Yeah. So like a couple months ago,
not just a washed up guy like me, but actually currently very fast racer
and currently ripping,
knows what it takes to take care of these guys.
Yeah, that's a very cool asset to have in your motorhome, I'd say.
Yeah.
How's the vibe about the race this year inside the motorhome? Because I'm sure you're hearing all the unfiltered stuff from the Honda boys. They're pretty media trained out there when they talk to us, but I'm sure you're hearing the juicy details in the motorhome. What's the overall vibe about the race, the course, the navigation, and all that stuff you're hearing?
Yeah, I think, the overall vibe's been a bit bad in the beginning of this race just because of what happened on stage 1.
Yeah.
A lot of people took a big loss, and I would say like maybe 80% of the people took a big loss across the board. And so it's been tough. Like everyone's worked super hard and put a lot of preparation and a lot into like this race and being here and being ready to go. And then first day you take a loss like that, it's kind of a morale breaker, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, it's like, yeah, you got to get up and you got to, it seems like super hard to like put that behind you.
Yeah. Yep. You're reminded of it every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but it's the only thing that you can do. You have to be optimistic and move forward on these kinds of things. And this is rally racing, and this is, you know, you've got to expect the unexpected. But I would say, like, yeah, yesterday the boys had a super solid, super good day. They're pretty stoked. Vibes are high right now. But yeah, I've seen the roller coaster go up and down with some of the things that have happened.
How about today? The course going over the top of the cars and all that stuff going into it.
Yeah, we kind of heard that maybe there was a few princesses out there at the refueling that didn't want to keep going. What's the
what's the word on the ground situation?
I think there's a across the board consensus that it was dangerous, and it's like, you know, I think things like this has happened in the past, and they've told the organization like, hey, like this is stupid, this is dangerous or whatever, and like, let's not do this. But then, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, they wanted to mix it up, but you know, the cars really broke the course. Like, I think it was pretty score course-ish, pretty Baja style out there. And it's just a lot of sand with rocks hidden underneath it and square edges. And yeah, honestly, I wasn't on the course, so I could only hear secondhand, but yeah, the boys said it was gnarly. And I guess at kilometer two, Ross Branch and the Italian who won yesterday, the MotoGP star, hit the same square edge. Yeah, Petrucci, he hit the same square edge and went over the bars.
Yeah, those.
And so, yeah, and there was another crash where a guy exited the race. And I think when they got to refueling, they said it's super dangerous. And then, so they stopped it at kilometer 100. But Ricky, Nacho, and a few others were still out front. And they had the helicopter following them for a while. And then finally the helicopter landed and stopped them and told them that they're canceling part of the stage because they didn't have enough helicopters to take, like, because all the helicopters were with down riders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, Ricky was okay with it in a sense because he's strong in that aspect of the race, just because he's ridden so many truck courses.
Yeah.
But I think overall, no one really enjoyed to ride the car course, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that for sure is not fun, riding a beat-up course like that. And that
sounds frightening.
You know, from going from what they've been riding for the last week, where they're just going wide open, and then all of a sudden you're getting into this beat-up stuff with rocks sticking out. For sure, it's going to suck to ride, but I think that also it could be a missed opportunity for a few guys like Ricky and maybe like Daniel Sanders and stuff like that,
yeah.
The guys that are more comfortable with that kind of riding.
A lot of risk, but a lot of reward sort of situation.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you just got to take the good with the bad and roll with the punches, and, you know, yeah, I think every mile that gets cut or every mile they're not racing is opportunity loss for someone like in Ricky's position where he's that far back from the first day, you know. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll move on, and yeah.
What do you see?
Hopefully things.
What do you see the second week shaking out like? Is everybody pumped to get out there and you know, start fresh sort of after this rest day tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the pace honestly has been super high, and the guys have been going for broke out there. And I really think, you know, on stage five and then with this car course where the nutrition rate is really starting to take over and we're seeing some guys dropping out and whatnot, I think coming into this second week, we're going to see a lot more of this, you know?
Right. People actually exiting the race, like you said, attrition.
Yeah, they're just there's people are starting to get tired and fatigued, and equipment's getting tired and fatigued, and so I think we're gonna start seeing like more stuff like that happening. But I mean, as far as Nacho and Ricky, they're pretty, I think they're finally coming into like the flow of the race, and they're really ready to get on the gas. So for them, I think they're pretty pumped and excited going into this second week.
Yeah, cool. That's, you know, it's an opportunity for them to really kind of, you know, have put a stamp on the race the second week, because, you know, I think the more that guys get worn down, the more, you know, the guys that have been pushing really hard the first week are going to be really suffering the second week. So it's going to be interesting to see things kind of flip-flop. And
plus they have the Kendall Norman nutrition program. They're just been building up. That stuff's really going to start firing, starting like stage seven. They're going to be like burning on high octane.
Yeah, that's what I'm banking on. So
nice.
But yeah, it helped last year, and they finished strong, and I think we'll be able to see this again. So
sweet.
But yeah, as long as number one, they just stay safe and have fun, and you know, make good decisions out there. But yeah, I really feel like they're starting to turn on. So it's exciting. It's exciting for me.
Nice.
Very cool. Well, yeah, get some rest. I know you probably only have a few hours, and then you're going to be back at the bivouac in the morning and cleaning stuff up and getting the motorhome ready and
for the second half of the race.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, it's pretty mellow compared to being a mechanic.
Imagine. So, I imagine. Yeah.
But, you know, every person on the team has an important role, so we just do our job the best we can, and hopefully we get those results we strive for.
Yeah, and let's hope the Motorhome World Championship gets a little more action on week two. Maybe you guys get a little more travel time and
more drama,
a little more excitement. We want to see some. You know, good action of dumping the poop tank and everything else.
Yeah, the motorhome race has been pretty boring this year.
Yeah, you know, honestly, we. We had used to have Cabazon, who's Kevin Benavides guy and helper on our team, and they obviously went to KTM. So I haven't even seen those guys on the road yet, and we used to battle pretty hard. But yeah, I'm trying to think if it's always something with the motorhome, like something's breaking or there's a blown fuse or it's never ending. I guess the most exciting thing that's happened to us was on the first day, there was a super long liaison, and this liaison did not have a gas station for like a super long ways. and Johnny got short gas, or he was like, the pump clicked off with the foam, you know, and it didn't get like a full tank. And so we got like 130K to go before we get to this little town, and the gauge is telling us we only got 80K left of diesel. So we're like, dude, we're not going to make it. And Johnny was driving, and I'm like, hey, there's a big truck right there, like an organization truck. Like, it was like a little pull off, and I was like, should we stop? And I just put the ball in his court, and last second he whips it off the exit. We go up to the guys. We go up to the guys and we're like, hey, like, you got any diesel? And the guy just like looks over the right and pulls this diesel can out and hands it to us. And we ended up cutting our water filling hose, and I gave an old siphon blowjob to the tank, and we filled the thing on the side of the road, and then like got 20 liters in it. And then like, yeah, it was kind of funny because we saw like other people like having to stop and like take their gas can out of the back and fill it up. And
that's awesome.
So it's kind of never a dull moment, but yeah, it hasn't been as exciting in the past, but hey, there's still a lot to go. You know, we've only hit the halfway point.
All right. Well, we want to hear from them. So thanks for the update today. Thanks for the insight. Best of luck in the second half of the race, and man, I hope you get a little rest and recover.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Awesome, thanks, Kendall. Have a good second week. We'll chat soon.
All right, Jesse. All right, Quinn. You guys are killing it. Keep up the good work over there.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks. See ya.
Later.
Nice. Thanks, Kendall.
All right. Yeah, it's always entertaining talking to Kendall Norman.
Kendall is, I think they're calling him the shaman of the pit, or like the guru of the camp.
The medicine man.
The medicine man. He's just bringing all the good vibes and positive food energy to them to get them all, you know, just going.
Yeah. So Kendall makes these plates. They're like these concoctions. He calls them a biofusion. And it's just it's all these herbs, turmeric, and all these crazy spices. Sea salts and spices and vegetables and chicken and biofusion. He actually gave me one of his recipes that that Faye Campbell, Johnny Campbell's wife, brought over when we were homesick with COVID, and it was this curry coconut biofusion soup. And oh man,
now you're making me hungry.
I think it killed the COVID for sure.
Biofusion, trademark Kendall Norman Incorporated, 2022.
So good stuff. A little insight into kind of the behind the scenes action going on in the bivouac there.
Yeah. The guys don't get much time off when you're working these races. He knows it. The mechanic side of it's way hectic. Like maybe tomorrow we can get Eric on the phone, and if he's not rebuilding bikes all day, Eric Certain, he's the factory mechanic for Ricky Brabeck. You know, he's a US guy. He's built so many Baja winning race bikes and other race bikes from Honda that it's just mind blowing what that guy's built. And, Kendall, you know, just a really badass in general. You talk to him on the phone, and he sounds very mellow and very cool, but like the guy just won the Baja 1000 for the seventh time, like a couple months ago. And it's not like he's been actively racing as a professional this whole year. He hasn't raced that much, right? No, in the last year?
Not really a full-time professional racer anymore. Right. You know, he works with Ricky and kind of helps train him with road books and rides road books with him and does stuff like that. And then, you know, works on bikes and he's just kind of bounces around, does a little racing here and there. And
yeah, he's part of that JCR Honda team, Johnny's race team here in the US. And, but like to go and just jump on the race winning team and put the hammer down at night in a Baja 1000 race is not something you just do off the couch, so to speak.
Kendall does.
He's such a badass. He's literally one of my favorite racers in the world just because I know he can do that kind of stuff. Like, and I love people that are so good at what they can do that they can just go to Baja and just be like, oh yeah, I raced again and I won.
Yeah, Kendall's an amazing talent, and him and I were teammates for years, and we won a lot of Baja races together. And I could always tell, I could see it in his eye when he was going to have one of those days
where it just blows everybody away.
Yeah, and you knew it. There was no one that could go faster than him on that day. And,
yeah,
you know, it was. We always gelled really well together because, you know, when he was having an off day, I knew it, and I was able to kind of raise my game. And when I was having a bad day, Kendall was usually on, and so we were a pretty good team together.
Dangerous duo, Quinn Cody and Kendall Norman. It's kind of like us.
Yeah.
Just without racing speed.
Right.
It's like when you have COVID, I stepped up. I'm in here on the mic.
Yeah.
Running all these buttons by myself. You're not here.
Yeah.
And now you're back. Now I can take a couple days off.
And you're still running all the buttons and doing all the editing. And
oh boy. That was an exciting day today just because the race it's really starting to bite people. You can hear it in Kendall when he's talking about attrition rate and something we've mentioned a little bit and we kind of see on the horizon, but everything was running so smooth through the first 5 days really that we didn't see this start happening. The courses were watered, smooth, sandy, not a lot of drama with the accidents happening and people withdrawing. And then 2 days in a row, we've got big crashes from Skylar Howes. He's out of the race. Big crash from Russ Branch. He's out of the race. Daniel Sanders has had two crashes in a row. Sam Sunderland's had a crash.
Yep.
Other people are crashing. John Barreda
confirmed he has a broken collarbone now, so he's not looking good going into the second week.
This is just like a attrition rate. Like Kendall said, he knows, everybody knows it's going to keep happening. The second half of this race is going to get gnarly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the guys that can recover on the rest day and be strong into the second week are the guys that are gonna you know, be good at the end of this thing.
Yeah, it's going to shake up some more with these top standings. And I mean, we're talking 20 minutes in the top 10, 30 minutes in the top 10 blanket. That can shake up really quick.
Normally what you see is you see a lot of the guys that pushed really hard the first week start dropping off the second week. And then you're going to start seeing some of the names that we haven't heard a lot from in the first week starting to come to the front the second week.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see guys like Kevin Benavidez, Andrew Short, Ricky Brabeck, Nacho Conejo. I think we're going to see those guys up near the front of the race. And some of the guys that have been pushing hard and using a lot of energy on week one
will be starting to fall into that attrition trap. Yeah. Yep. Do you think the only factor being, can they make up enough time for the overall result? That's going to be the big factor. And we're just not going to know until each day shakes out.
Yeah. And time on who, you know, that's the other big factor, right? Because, okay, the time on the guy that's leading the race right now
might not mean that much.
Might not mean anything. Mm-hmm. It could be the guy that's sitting in fifth place might be the guy that you need to make time on.
Yeah.
And you just don't know that at this moment.
Yeah. So anybody in the top 10 is in a good spot for the overall, really, if they have the skills to make it happen. And, you know, we're going to be surprised to see what Ricky and that sort of, that group that got really affected by that time loss in the beginning. It's going to be really interesting to see how they can continue to make up time, hopefully avoid those pitfalls and those, you know, race ending situations and, you know, just take advantage of it unfortunately happening to other people.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, you know, Sam Sunderland's been kind of controlling things and,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be interesting. We've got a rest day tomorrow.
Right. So. Rest day for everybody that is involved in this race, except for your friends here at the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show. We don't take rest days.
That's right. No rest.
We're here every day.
We're here. We're back in tomorrow for rest day show.
Rest day show. We're going to cover quite a few topics on the rest day. Hopefully get a lot of people on the phone because, you know, they should be available. If not, hey, we respect that too. But we're going to go over the original by Motul class, which is, you know, the old, you know, Malle Moto, they call it. These are people racing on their own without a support team, doing all their own work
on
the bike.
No support. They get an airplane box to carry all their gear in.
And a little bag for their tent. They just flop down on the ground every night. So really cool. We're going to get into that. We're going to cover lightweight prototype side-by-sides and the special vehicle side-by-side category where the Americans are just kicking some booty.
Yep.
We haven't had a lot of time to give those guys any love, but we want to talk about them. There's some records that could be broken there. For our stage wins for a rally and, you know, really good stuff going. We could talk about monster trucks and trash trucks.
Maybe a little Q&A too. If you guys want to send us some questions on Instagram, we've been trying to get to the ones that, you know, an indirect way to answer some of the questions that you guys have been sending in. But
yeah, if anybody has any burning questions,
Dakar Rally Daily on Instagram, just send us a message and we'll try to make a list of questions and get some of that stuff answered tomorrow.
Yep. So big day for everybody tomorrow to recover what they can. Hopefully people will come out of that better than they went in, but sometimes an injury or tendonitis or something like that can flare up while you're not using it. So we're going to be interested to see what stage 7 looks like. We're not going to get too ahead of ourselves here for stage 7 and pick a winner.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of info comes out of the rest day tomorrow. And we'll worry about that because stage 7 is going to be another long one.
Yeah, it's supposed to be over 700 kilometers on the bike, which is a long time to race your motorcycle.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. But the guys are going to be getting a lot of work done from the physios tomorrow, a lot of massages and whatever, taping and whatever they need to get done. So
massive intake of anti-inflammatory medication.
Yeah. And just, I think, organizing all their stuff too from the first week. I think stuff gets strewn out everywhere. And so it's nice to get all your gear organized, get your goggles ready, get your hydration, your nutrition.
I would have already lost I would only have left-handed gloves at this point in the race. I wouldn't have any right gloves because I misplace things very often.
Yeah.
Every day I'd be, damn it, can I borrow a glove, please? Let's hope we can get some people on the phone tomorrow. And you got anything else you want to talk about today?
I think we're good. Just, you know, thank again. I think we need to thank our sponsors for making this happen.
The Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show brought to you by Climb.
Yep.
They're crushing it.
Giant Loop. Giant Loop's been a great help. Double Take Mirror.
Yep, Double Take Mirror.
Of course, today's show is presented by Moto Minded.
They're awesome. I love those guys at Moto Minded. Good Colorado company.
Yep.
We're very trustworthy.
Getting our night rides going this year. So kind of made a pact around KTM that every weekday when it rains, we're going to go out on a dual sport ride at night, go hit the trails.
Yeah.
So we're getting our Moto Minded lights set up. And now that I've back from COVID, hopefully we get a little more rain here in Southern California and we get out and some night rides.
Yeah, and steal a bike.
If you haven't done it, get your night dual sport setup going and get out there and ride.
There's no excuse. Don't stop riding when it gets dark. Yeah, call Moto Minded. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the messages on Instagram and, you know, all the props. We love it. We're having a lot of fun, and we're here for rest day tomorrow. See you tomorrow.